very happy to be joined now by John Morosi, MLB Insider, MLB Network, and Fox Sports. John, thanks so much for this breaking news today, and we were on top of this yesterday as Ken Rosenthal was reporting that the Blue Jays were the favorites to land Melvin Upton Jr. It appears they've pulled it off. What are your initial impressions of this move?
Well, Ben, I really think when you look at Melvin Upton Jr., first of all, he's really bounced back the last couple of years. He's been a better player, maybe not quite to the level he was in Tampa Bay, but certainly better than he was in Atlanta. So that's the key thing. He's been a better player. I also think, Ben, you look at the fact that his contract runs through next year. This is ongoing, I think, planning by the Jays to try to secure some element of their outfield for next year. And I think that they're basically insuring against the possible departures of Bautista and or Saunders in the outfield. So now one thing about this that we haven't figured out quite yet, Ben, is how much of the money will the Padres be eating? So that's obviously a key element of this. I mean, if you've got Melvin Upton Jr. at the full, I believe it's $16.25 million next year, it's different than if you've got him at $6 million or $8 million. So I think overall, this is a good pickup for a team that maybe wanted one more righty bat. I would still say, though, Ben, that they're short in terms of pitching, because as you talk about the Jays and as they look at the possibility of shutting down Sanchez or at least moving him to the bullpen, I still think that is their biggest need to really address the starting rotation as good as it's been. And guess what they have to address now. But I really think this move was partially because of 2016, but also partially because of 2017, and certainly the very real possibility of losing either or potentially both of Saunders and Bautista.
John, good morning. You kind of talked about around about how Melvin, BJ / Melvin Upton's career has kind of gone up and down. I have to ask you, the Jays acquiring Upton, obviously they're not acquiring the 2007-2008 version of Melvin Upton, but they certainly aren't acquiring the Atlanta Brave version of him either. What happened in Atlanta after that big contract he signed?
You know, it's a great question. I think there was a lot of pressure there. He was playing with his brother, which I think was a challenge in some level for him. So I just think that it was a situation where he signed the contract of a lifetime, and whether that made him put pressure on himself or maybe after getting that, you know, so I think sometimes players will sign that huge contract and then maybe through no fault of their own, just you're striving for this big deal for your whole career. And you get it, and I think sometimes the focus drifts a little bit. So I think it might have been either some combination of the two. Either there was a lot of pressure there, especially with his brother being there on the team, mm-hmm. to maybe, you know, had that rivalry and perform better than the other. So I think there was a lot there, and it did seem like he got better last year. Now, of course, Justin was there with him last year too, but it seems as though just that the at bats have been better. Certainly, you could say he's a plus defender in left field, which is what they'll have, to flank Pillar. And then, of course, the question will be, you know, certainly against, and obviously Pillar has batted leadoff a bit against some left-handed pitching. It'll be where he hits in the Jays lineup, and if he ends up being a leadoff guy versus hitting down in the lineup. I think that's a really interesting question for the Jays and John Gibbons to figure out is where Upton slots in there. But I really think you look at the big picture, guys, and I really do believe this was as much about 2017 as it was 2016. And you look at the moves they've made, I think not so subtly. I mean, you bring in Upton for next year. You've signed Justin Smoke now for two more guaranteed years beyond this year. I think they're preparing for the next phase of this ball club where maybe they will not have at least two of the three of Saunders, Encarnacion, and Bautista.
Talking to John Morosi. John, so the rumors were that the Orioles were very heavily involved in discussions for Melvin Upton Jr. So were the Indians. How close were those teams, and how much do you estimate that the Blue Jays outbid either the Orioles or the Indians, or just had actually a better pool of prospects for the Padres to pick from?
Well, it's hard to know, Ben, until the final piece comes out,
yeah.
Both the prospects and the money, right? Because the money,
yeah,
is really important here, because I think if you're the Padres and if they were, and if the team, theoretically, I'm not saying this happened, but if the team would have said, hey, we'll take on all the salary. The Padres might have said, well, fine, we'll take a really, really marginal prospect.
Yeah.
So I think there's always a sliding scale where the trading team will have to sometimes assume a larger portion of the salary if it means getting back better talent in return. So I think they're probably on this, like most trades, was a sliding scale. I do know the Orioles were certainly talking pretty heavily with the Padres recently, and really the Orioles were also talking to the Padres about Andrew Cashner, who's supposed to pitch tonight.
Yeah.
And it's still possible, guys, that you may see a different pitcher on the mound. Paul Clemens was the one that Andy Green mentioned yesterday. You may still see a different pitcher on the mound tonight than Andrew Cashner if he's traded. So there's a lot of activity still going on with the Padres. Cashner's name is obviously heavily involved. Derek Norris's name has been heavily involved in some trade talk. So, I think overall it was a pretty competitive bidding for Upton, and it's a credit to the Jays in Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, that they won that bidding. And I'm very curious to see both what the share of the salary is being paid, and also certainly the caliber of the prospect going back. As Ken Rosenthal reported, it is believed to be a Class A prospect, so a fairly low-level minor league player in terms of service time.
Yeah.
Although it could be a top prospect, you never know. But that is what Ken has reported.
How does he affect the Blue Jays lineup in 2016? We understand that he's part of the outfield mix in 2017, but for 2016, where does he, and you imagine you acquire a player like this in the season he's having, he's playing every day. Blue Jays have a full outfield right now, but I guess you can move Jose Bautista to first base DH and timeshare there with Edwin Encarnacion and maybe Justin Smoakes to the bench. Is that the most logical scenario for the Blue Jays with Melvin Upton Jr. in their lineup?
Well, it does seem like there's a little bit of overlap. And of course, Carrera had been playing pretty decently well in place of Bautista. So there's a lot going on there where you look at it and say it maybe isn't the most natural thing, right, to have one more righty bat. Because you look at the big picture out there, you've got a right-handed hitting center fielder, a righty coming back in right field in Bautista, obviously a lefty in Saunders in left. And then at first base, you've got, or DH, you've got Edwin there. Now, of course, Smoakes is a switch hitter. So it doesn't, you're right in that it doesn't feel like the most natural fit, right? And it certainly, he's played much more left than he has in center field. So it really makes me wonder sort of how the overall look will be. And you're right. Maybe part of that answer is it's Edwin at first and Bautista DH and Melvin in right and Pilar at center and Saunders in left. I'm sure we'll see a number of days where that's the case, but it does sort of raise a lot of questions about exactly how it's all going to fit. And again, they just signed Smoke to an extension, so it would be a little, it would seem a little odd to bench him. Although, again, based on that scenario that you and I just talked about, it's very possible it's going to happen. So it's a very interesting trade, I think, on a lot of levels. But I think first and foremost is they're looking at this as a player who's having a bounce back year. He's been at least a league average hitter and a bit better this season. And I think they feel like they're getting a good asset in someone who really, I think outside of the dip in production in Atlanta, has aged pretty well. I mean, he's a very, very athletic build. I mean, you look at him, he doesn't look any older than he was 10 years ago from the standpoint of how he moves. So I think that's a really encouraging thing that you're getting somebody that's still, you know, by physicality in the prime of his career. And I think he's going to get a lot of at-bats in the Jays even the rest of the season.
John, does this move by the Blue Jays trigger anything with the Boston Red Sox or the Baltimore Orioles? Is there, I'm not going to use the word panic among management of those two teams, but do they look at this from their standpoint and go, you know what, we have to bolster something as well?
You know, it's a good question, but I don't think that for the Red Sox, they're still looking at pitching. Their lineup is so good, and Baltimore's lineup is so good. So I think you look at the big picture, their needs today are the same as they were yesterday, I think, for both of them. I think Boston may still be able to get into the mix for a Chris Sale. I know that they've been scouting Tampa Bay as well. So from Boston's standpoint, I think one more pitcher, and of course they just put Koji Wohar on the DL recently. I think Dave Dombrowski, we know that. He's very aggressive. He never stops. I think he's still looking for pitching. Similar, I think, in a certain respect with Baltimore and Dan Duquette. Dan knows that really they're probably short in the starting pitching realm. I think their bullpen, we know, is elite with the way that, that Britton and Brock have pitched this year. They're pretty good back there. So I think that it will surprise me, guys, it really will, if Baltimore does not add a starting pitcher between now and August 1st. I think one team to watch there, too, as a seller, would be the Angels, because now Santiago's out there. Even Jared Weaver's out there. I think he's a better fit for a big ballpark, Weaver would be. But I think that the Angels have emerged now as a team that could potentially sell some pitching. And so we'll see if maybe they pair up with the Orioles in the next week.
All right, we've gone long enough. We got to talk about Aaron Sanchez as well, John, because it's the topic du season of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yes.
Will he move to the bullpen? Another spectacular start for him yesterday. And if he moves to the bullpen, Drew Hutchison, I suppose, is in this rotation. It depends if the Blue Jays are able to acquire another starter, of course. But yeah, the starting pitching depth would be razor thin if he's not in it any longer. And he's been the Blue Jays' best starter, start of the season, until now. Do you believe that the Blue Jays know exactly what they're going to do with him? Or are they still adjusting on the fly, and that's why they're not telling us exactly when or if this transition will take place? Or do they know 100%?
I think, Ben, that they are moving in the direction of more certainty. And by that I mean, I think the Jays know that they are likely going to limit his innings, and they're preparing accordingly. Ross Atkins just yesterday was on MLB Network and said it's, quote-unquote, more likely than not that they will have to move him to the bullpen. So when a GM says that, when a GM says more likely than not, you can basically take that to a higher level of likelihood and say it's probably really likely, because he wouldn't have just said that by accident. So I think that they are preparing for that, as hard as it is to believe. I mean, that 7 shutout innings last night, he was so good. But again, that's the Jays are looking at, and Ross said this yesterday, both objective and subjective measures. They're looking at the innings number. They're looking at how he feels. Maybe the consistency of his delivery, if it looks like there is any signs of fatigue. But I think they're at the point where, at the very first sign of fatigue, guys, he's going to go to the bullpen.
Yeah,
I think that's basically where they're at. And clearly there's going to be a step down, because he's been an all-star. He's been really good. And again, the Estrada component, we've talked about this before, and full marks to him for coming back strong from the DL.
Mm-hmm.
But I would still say that's a concern, especially if you take Sanchez to the bullpen and all of a sudden after a week or two, he's no longer stretched out and basically he's going to have to be a reliever for the rest of the season. And you know, God forbid, again, if Estrada's back flares up again, you've basically lost your two best starting pitchers. And Happ has been good. Dickey's been reliably Dickey. And then there's Hutchison. So it's not quite... You look at it, and it really does. It just doesn't look like the same really solid, consistent rotation. I mean, they've only had 6 starting pitchers all season, which is a phenomenal marker of pride. And so when you lose that, though, it really, I think, changes the dynamic a little bit. And if Estrada all of a sudden has a flare up again in the back, you've taken a strength. And it's become a weakness really overnight, and that's a really hard thing for a team to deal with on the fly, especially, guys, once you're in the portion of the year where you can't make a trade without using waivers. So it's a really, to me, the only way, I believe, for the Jays to make that move with Sanchez, which I respect, if that's what they want to do, I respect that. The only way for them to make that move and still, I think, maintain their accountability to the guys in the clubhouse and, frankly, the fan base, is to add a starting pitcher of some renown and credibility to make sure that they have that bridge to the end of the season. Because otherwise, you're taking a team with a really good chance of making the playoffs and really, really taking a hit to that percentage because of a long-term concern, which, again, I'm not minimizing it. But if you're going to do that, I think you really have to bolster that rotation with a pitcher that will walk in that clubhouse and have instant credibility with the players.
Talking to John Morosi, going to take your phone calls on the Melvin Upton Jr. acquisition in just a bit. 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590, star 590 on the cell. Back to Sanchez for a second, John. How about my theory which I threw out there a couple hours ago. I thought I was pretty smart for coming up with
I thought
it was real. I mean, you're the Harvard guy, so you tell me if I'm smart. No,
I was admitted by mistake. But go on.
Okay. No, it's because I'm trying to figure out why the Blue Jays aren't just saying if they do have a plan or if they have a number or they have some sort of idea, like what kind of competitive advantage is it to them in keeping that under wraps? And I figured it out. It's because the non-waiver trade deadline is on Monday, and you lose some of your leverage if teams know you're desperate for a starter. If they know, if the San Diego Padres know, Aaron Sanchez, while we were kind of hedging our bets recently in the media, we know he's going to the bullpen because we can't afford to wear out his arm this season. We know he's going to the bullpen. He can't be a starter the rest of the season, and we need to add a starter. Maybe the Padres hold you over a barrel for Andrew Cashner. What do you think of that, John?
I think you're absolutely right.
Yes.
Well done.
Yeah.
You have a second. You have a second career, Ben, as a baseball insider. If you want one,
thank you.
Let me know. I'll hand you over my little insider's handbook, and then you'll be good to go.
Well, I'll go to the inner sanctum of baseball insiders. I can't wait. Yeah.
Exactly. I will welcome you into the fraternity,
the brotherhood. I'll learn the handshake and all that. I can't wait.
Exactly. Your BBWA card is in the mail. But to your point. Ben, I would say this. This is why, as sort of an aside, this is why I and so many people who report on baseball love John Gibbons, because he's been honest about this from the very beginning, right? I mean, and whether it's necessarily by the book and or what he's been told to say or should say, he is an honest person, right? And he's just going to come out and say forthright, listen, he's probably moving to the bullpen. Gibby's been saying that for months. Okay, so that's my aside of why one of the reasons why I admire John Gibbons so much is how honest he is. He can't help himself. He basically he's not going to deceive you. He's just going to say, listen, he's probably going to the bullpen. And so that's my little aside on why Gibby's great.
John, thanks so much for this. Really appreciate you doing it.
My pleasure, guys, and a fun week ahead. Hopefully there'll be some more trade deadline news that breaks at about 6:15 or 7:30 in the morning.
Perfect.
That gives you guys perfect breaking news to discuss on the show.
Oh, if you see your good buddy Ken Rosenthal, give him a high five for us, because we appreciated that this morning.
I certainly will. He's the best. He is this time of year, man. It's unbelievable what he does. He is the greatest.